Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here. We're in studio in Denver, Colorado today. And this podcast is many, many conversations in the making and the threads that are coming together. Credit where credit is due. We're doing a great conversation around multiple podcasts with the Housing Innovation Alliance. And we're really putting this whole podcast series around the deep dive that they've titled The Roadmap for Offsite Construction. Eric Holt and the team at University of Denver, we're picking up and continuing to have the conversations from the summit that we had last April with the Housing Innovation Alliance, or all of these different acronyms. And there's so many great conferences and so many great people around those conferences. But we're going to do three different series. In this episode of the series, we're going to be talking with Ross and Eric, who are two of my favorite people in offsite construction that we really have coined as System Built. And they, we did a presentation at last April's summit, and we were kind of that gooey middle of coming around the conversation. And I love what the Art of Construction Master Facilitators are bringing the different theory and practices together. And these guys are both living it. So, Tribe, my main message that I want you all to hear is that these are bringing lessons from the doers who are utilizing the offsite construction that we call system-built construction through the Master Facilitators. And how is this going to benefit? Is that this stuff is not a one-sentence thing. It's actually really hard to start it, keep doing it, and maintaining it. And we're here to talk about how we can continue the momentum and figure out how we take the lessons learned from the last event at DU and work with the Master Facilitators who are utilizing offsite construction methods. And so my perspective is that these guys are leading the charge, but really coming from two very different ways. And as when I started my journey around modular or volumetric and all these things that we've kind of come around, how do we take these systems and built them with a T, actually built physical products together? These guys are coming from different ways. They've tried different ways and maneuvering of, do you just do a component offsite or do you do everything offsite? And the reality is, there is not one way of doing all that stuff, and it'll never be all offsite or all onsite. It's about utilizing different methods, but having collaborative conversations. So it's an honor to have Ross and Eric here in the studio. Let's fire this thing off with our speed round. We're going to get to know Eric and then Ross and their whole story. Eric, welcome to the studio. What's your favorite beverage?
Devin, wow. So glad to be here, and thank you for inviting us in. So I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball. Yes, I like my draft beer and other beverages like that, but can never get enough vegetables. That has always been my struggle in life. So every morning I try to do a spinach, carrot, apple juice. It doesn't even necessarily taste great, but I chug it every morning so I get all my veggies in.
That a boy. That's good stuff. We need to do more of that probably, right, Ross?
Most unique places, I guess we'll start there, and where I've traveled is to Molokai in the Hawaiian Mountains and islands, and there is a leper colony there, the last leper colony in the United States. So I've taken a bunch of groups down there to do some service work and to learn about the history down there, and it's one of the most beautiful islands really on the planet. So really, really sacred ground.
Outstanding. Well, it's an honor to have Eric Schaefer, who's the Chief Business Development Officer at Fading West. What do you like to do when you're not doing that with Fading West? What's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction silos? You guys are definitely breaking down. We're honored to have you here.
There we go. Well, my wife and I, Kim, are runners, and we've done numerous marathons in Los Angeles. We're getting to the age where that is a little bit of a stretch for us. But we love being outdoors and running and walking and enjoying all the things that Colorado has to offer outside.
Awesome. Well, good on you. We'll flip it over to Mr. Ross Cohen. What an honor to have you. You and I have had a ton of conversations lately around these topics. And you've really been the guy that has lived it and really questioning, let's not just jump into another shiny object. Let's really figure this out, how we can scale and build this together. And I commend you for that. But first, let's get to know a little bit about Mr. Ross Cohen. What's your favorite beverage?
Devin, I think you know what my favorite beverage is. I'm a bourbon enthusiast. So guilty as charged, as you well know.
And what's your favorite place you've traveled?
Well, I'll jump into your next question. I'm a fly fisherman, so my favorite place I've traveled is probably any number of the Colorado High Country locations and rivers of the state. We really enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, it's an honor to have the president of D.L. Cohen in the studio today. What do you like to do when you're not solving all the system-built stuff, building your great walls offsite?
As I mentioned before, Devin, I'm a fly fisherman, and most of my time not working, I'm probably trying to catch a fish somewhere. So,
all right, so here we go. Eric, what is your story that led you to being the chief business officer at Fading West?
Devin, my background has been really all over the place. I have lived in Los Angeles for many years, and one of the things that we did there was I would take big groups down to Tijuana and the mountains around there and build homes down there for folks, really meaningful stuff. We do basically what would be the size of an ADU, and sometimes as many as three generations of folks would move in down there, and we would literally hand mix the cement and just get kids and their parents to go down there and build homes. So we did that for many years through the 90s and 2000s, and then got into Fading West. Charlie Chupp, who is a 35-year friend of mine, went to high school with my wife, believe it or not, was living out here in Buena Vista, Colorado, and was trying to build some affordable housing in Buena Vista. There was no place to live, and really got into it as a developer and couldn't find subs, couldn't find GCs, which is kind of the story here in mountain towns and really throughout the West in a lot of places. And so he pivoted to modular and started shipping boxes in from Nebraska, some of the different factories there. And so I came along for the journey somewhere along there and decided to start helping them out with that. We quickly saw that factories were needed here in the state. And so during COVID, we got funded to build a factory out in Buena Vista, 110,000 square foot, fully volumetric factory out there, really designed as a manufacturing plant, almost as a Toyota car factory, except we're building houses. And so our focus has really been in the affordable arena, area median income, kind of 80 to 120%. So highly repeatable, green homes, architecturally interesting, kind of Corollas and Camrys that are houses that can be built very quickly, but high quality to send to folks around the state.
Yeah, and I'm glad you shared the story about your kind of origin of getting into the housing. I think about this last week, we supported the 10-year anniversary of Lindsay Kruger, who was show 96, and she started a company called Nevis, which is helping mothers that don't have kids that are homeless and working around the globe. And using those different stories are really cool about really understanding how do we figure out these percentages of solving these problems around the words attainable or affordable that all get mixed all over the place. And I think it's really critical to understand as we go down this conversation today to begin with the end in mind of what is that one thing I'm going to ask you guys when we end this whole thing of how to move this industry forward. And you guys have really done a great job working with the mountain towns around affordable or attainable. Can you kind of go down that journey and talk a little bit about the differences or variables of how you've been successful doing that?
Yeah, one of the things that we saw early on was this we call missing middle housing, right? So this is not necessarily, let's say, HUD housing. It is more for the working class. So this could be teachers, social workers, fire, police, all those very necessary families and workers for mountain towns or any town to exist. And so for us, that has been our focus. And what we've realized is it really takes a village to make these projects work. So you need not only an affordable manufacturer like ourselves, but you need the town to make sure that the entitlement process goes smoothly and quickly, that the lots are small enough so that developers coming in aren't faced with a really difficult decision of building, you know, a giant house on to so that they can make money, but the lots are small enough to where you can get density. So there's that piece to it. The other thing in our state has been fantastic is from the governor on down, they realize what a need this is. So getting state funds to help these projects, whether it's with infrastructure or low interest loans or just straight grants to make sure that this project works. So that is one piece to the puzzle. And then the other is kind of that, we'll call it vertical integration of the factory, of the GC, of the developer, of the architect, all working together from the beginning. And again, so I'm talking more maybe about attainable housing here, which is again, that missing middle, rather than, let's say, affordable, which is, again, more of a HUD construction.
Yeah, and I want to jump in there and commend you. We'll make sure we put it in the show notes of, like, you just had the pleasure of speaking on the floor of the feds and talking through the different ways of what do you call stuff and how do you implement stuff. Like, and I want to make sure you and Bleeker and Charlie and the team get credit where credit's due, because in the state of Colorado, you guys have, you've been in the news, but you've been so collaborative about how do we figure out what to call this stuff and actually get these projects moving forward, which is critical in this time of, especially where we're sitting right now, of like, how do you move this stuff forward? So I just want to make sure I took the time to, from all of us on the Art of Construction working together, thank you for stepping up. And that's why we have this global megaphone, to make sure, kind of seven times for the first time, of affordable, attainable. Like, we're just talking about how we actually get housing to the working class, right?
Yep. And what you were referencing was, I had the honor of testifying before the Senate Subcommittee on Housing, Transportation, and Community Relations. And what we're seeing is, even though we're out here in Colorado in a small town, we have touched a nerve nationally, that there is something innovative about this process, that there's just not enough homes being built in this range. And because of that, folks are taking notice, not only in our state, but around the entire country. How do we get more factories going? How do we get more innovation going? Which, again, as you touched on at the beginning of this podcast, could mean a variety of ways of doing this. So the word is getting out, and we are honored to play a small role in that. So we have seen over and over and over again that it takes a team to do this. You need the manufacturing piece, which is Fading West, the construction team that is aligned with what we're doing. And then the developer, who could also include the architect team and all that, all working together from the beginning, because it is a different way to build when you use manufacturing. The plans are set. We're basically building rectangle boxes. So you have to know that whatever we're building or able to build in a factory can fit on your site. And that might not always work, and we understand that. But I think in this arena, this attainable housing arena, this makes a ton of sense. And then the second piece to that then is the zoning and the entitlements and the tap fees and all those things that go into building an attainable house, that the towns and municipalities are working with us rather than against us as we go through this. And so what we have seen, again, then, is the most important results to this is that teachers are not driving 50 miles round trip or even further to get into their jobs, or social workers, or that restaurants can be open year-round because workers have places to live rather than having to, like what we're seeing in mountain towns now, shut down on Mondays and Tuesdays because there's literally not enough folks to work there. And so this process then, what we see is our costs are about 30-35% of the entire project. So you have the manufacturing costs, you have the on-site costs, which is building the foundations and finishing out what we call the set and stitch. And then you have the cost for infrastructure, obviously, and that's sometimes challenging, as you know, Devin, in mountain towns, on sides of mountains and things like that. And then the fully entitled land and all the costs that come along with that can be as much as, you know, 20% of the entire project. So we see the word attainability as something that all of those folks have to work together to bring the price down. I think one of the other things that people need to know also about manufactured housing or modular housing is what we call it, is that the way you pay for these is a little bit different than site built. So we are a pipeline building house after house, day after day. We're right now building a house every 9 days. About 5 or 6 houses a week come out of our factory. So with that, being said, we have to pay for materials and staffing. We have 120 folks on the factory floor, 175 in our business. So there has to be kind of a prepayment on that. So you're paying as much as 95% of the box cost before the house is even built. So there's an education piece to this, and one of the things you've been fantastic at, Devin, is helping people understand the education needed here, because when modular fails, and we see it over and over again, is people are not speaking from the beginning and do not understand the process, and that's when modular kind of gets in trouble. So with all those things happening, all those people working together and the plans and the architecture and all that happening from the beginning, we are seeing in the mountains about a 20% decrease in cost and probably a 50% decrease in time to until folks are moving into these either apartments or single family homes. So definitely high quality, definitely speed to market at a lower cost. All those things are possible, and they are happening all around our state at this point.
Outstanding stuff. And I want to highlight a recent project of case study where we just collaborated. So day to day, I don't talk about much on the podcast, but I own a window and door company where we supply windows and doors, and we're honored to be working with Fading West, to where I think about like the one in Breckenridge, to where you have this great plan, and then the town says, well, we need to do this, and make it happen. And it's just coming together as a collaborative team, and that's a great project to showcase that. So this kind of whole of like owning the whole thing, like Fading West has done, or in the past of owning the whole thing, to where today, to say, how do you meet in the middle, whether you take a sum or the whole thing? And that's where I'm super excited to pass the baton to Ross Cohen and have him talk about a family of legacies doing these different constructed methods of moving it forward, to where I really want him to talk about integration and how to meet in the middle of how you do those things, to understand how inspections work and how you could do a business today and move it forward. So, Ross, what's your story that led you to being the president at D.L. Cohen?
Thank you, Devin. And I want to reiterate how flattered I am to be sitting beside Eric from Fading West. This is a wonderful opportunity for me. I grew up in a construction family, and so like it or not, I was going to pursue that as a career. I went to DU and got a real estate and construction management degree, and went to work as an estimator for a framing contracting company. And in 2009, the company ultimately went out of business on the heels of what was going on in the greater market and frankly, a bad job or two. At the same time, my father was winding down an offsite building company of his own, where they were building entire structures on site-specific factories, where they would convey oftentimes a two-story home from an on-site factory to the ultimate foundation. And as we sat there in 2009 with the economy in flux, we decided to start our own framing company at a time when we assumed rightly that it was cheap to start a company, albeit with little work. and figured that we'd rise with the tide. And through the years, we grew a framing company of building single-family detached residences to larger communities of for-sale homes, to smaller townhome projects and odd commercial work. And ultimately, 6 or 8 years ago, we found ourselves building larger apartment projects, both urban and garden style work. And as we grew in that arena and schedules became ever more demanding, oftentimes our schedules are, frankly, with few exceptions, we're expected to deliver 10 to 20,000 square feet of complete and correct framing per week. And frankly, the code compliance and the product is just more demanding than it was 15 or 20 years ago in the single family for sale arena. What we determined was that the only way to deliver complete and correct square footage was with incorporating offsite built components. We'd tried delivering micro elements, albeit not terribly successfully, whether that was posts or pre-built window and door elements. And what we found was that the required field framing component was such that we weren't materially changing our ability to deliver what we ultimately needed to contractually complete and correct trade-ready square footage. 2 or 3 years ago, what we ultimately determined was that in order to deliver complete and correct square footage, we needed a comprehensively built wall panel. In order to do so in Denver, given the limited ability to purchase wall panels from the existing supply chain, in the local Denver community, there is so little wall panel manufacturing capacity that we found ourselves in a situation where in order to incorporate the application of wall panels comprehensively on all of our work, we had to create the manufacturing line and the ability to build panels offsite in-house. What we do today is just that, and the wall panels we ship for all of our work are comprehensively modeled in conjunction with trusses on every project we do. What's important about the process that we have implemented is that it's, from our perspective, entirely custom on every project we do. Nothing that we get is prescriptively designed for the application of offsite components. Rather, we're able to pursue, tackle, and execute nearly every wood frame project in the market.
So I want to jump in there a little bit and just say what you guys have done such a great job, and I've had the pleasure of touring D.L. Cohen multiple times, and we're working on trying to utilize putting boots on the ground, just like Fading West. You guys your doors have been so open on bringing people in to talk through it. And every time I get a tour from Eric or Ross at the different facilities, it blows my mind about how different where the rubber meets the road, how they're doing those businesses. And that's a good thing if you really want to run towards innovation. But then we have to bring that full circle to say, the key word I heard you say, Ross, to build from is trade ready. And trade ready is like how trade ready means you can properly pass the baton as a master facilitator to another one in the master facilitator program through platforms like Art of Construction of how you connect these dots. And then you talked about comprehensive modeling. But then I wanted to jump in before I pass the baton back to you, as you said, but we really did it per project. And I've sat in meetings with you still today, and we've had a lot of discussions, both with D.L. Cohen or Fading West, around, okay, what is the model that we're building from? And it's really hard to just do it over and over again if you're in a different municipality or a project or a different developer or customers of all about meeting in the middle or instead of missing the middle. And so that's a key thing I think we're all trying to figure out how to build upon, because we want to see these projects be built and do them better than just the way they've always been done. And that's the part, Ross, I want to pass it back to you, of talk a little bit more about that comprehensive modeling, about how you meet in the middle with today's building codes that I think are way more legacy than people realize or think when you hear about this, like me, a guy as a window and door guy, about how they're pushing down all of these requirements, but yet how it's actually done as a comprehensive way has a lot of stuff to be figured out when it comes to system build. Ross?
Devin, our specialty is multifamily framing. Wood framing has historically been applied to the single family for sale detached market so routinely that the details are rather normal, or haven't wildly changed. I think as we've seen more and more and more wood 3, 4, and 5-story product built, which we do a lot of, understanding and how to properly execute what's involved in a 5-story product, whether especially type 3A, where you have extensive fire assemblies and odd floor to wall connections, and really extensive shear design. What we sort of preach is that these buildings get built around shear elements and incorporating that with concrete and ultimately doing it in a way where MEP trades can also install optimally is a challenge. Historically, with stick framing, I think the industry has sadly gotten to a place where all involved expect very little from framers, generally speaking, that the structure built will have to be torn apart and wrangled into place to ultimately have something that drywall can be installed upon.
100%. And this is where the disruptor Devin's going to chime in and really talk about how Ross and his team, and I've educated like how you manage shear walls and getting partners of the tie downs that I knew nothing about that stuff, but how passionate you are about settling and how this stuff all comes together versus the framer, just throw it up and then hurry up and get it built so we have something to move the money along and get everyone else into there. The stories and lessons learned from you, and it's not just on 4 stories up. You guys have the same thing of stacking boxes, right? So whether you're stacking 2 or 10, you really need to have these guiding principles of like, how is this structure built? And there's so many podcasts we've done around that, around different networks, like the deep dive of the passive house world of like how they get about thermal barrier envelopes and the different, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of crappy stuff being built out there still that you've educated me a lot on, Ross, and you're passionate about not putting a good product that you're handing that off to be able to have it hold up and not settle and work with the trades, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the old adage of choose 2 of cost, efficiency, and price is sad, but I mean, how many times have we all heard that? I think what's wonderful about properly incorporating offsite built components is that we are certainly able to deliver unrivaled schedules. I mean, we are routinely required and able to deliver 12, 13, 14,000 square feet a week in just-in-time delivered components to urban sites that are on concrete podiums with zero laydown. We're able to deliver a dramatically improved quality. The saws that cut our elements cut to, and I'm not joking when I say it, a 64th of an inch and mark every element of structure as they come off the saw. And every micro element of framing in a building is built identically and every unit's the same. And ultimately, for me, it's sort of a mind-blowing concept. But to say you could deliver a framed project on any custom design product where I could give you a, quote, as-built drawing that is actually nearly identical representative of what went into the field, rather than just a general representation of the details we used, but where you knew where every stud was in a building and every unit was built identically is really powerful and just foreign, I think, to the traditional expectations of the industry. And then ultimately with price, we are able to, by way of reducing general conditions, reducing schedule, and ultimately being far more efficient with the materials required to build the product, we are saving a close to 20% of the aggregate material needed to build a project. And in doing so, able to optimize the subsequent trades as well. So it's really...
Wait a second. Did I hear you're actually putting the 2x4 where the plan says it should go?
Well, we're putting...
Wait a second.
Well, it's not just putting the 2x4 where it belongs. It's not putting two 2x4s where one belonged and not building every corner solid.
What do you mean? Just one 2x4? I don't get it. You have to put more together sometimes for a 10-story building or putting boxes on top of them or shipping them down the road or all these different things of like how the comprehensive model gets built is so critical. And you guys are so passionate about your approach to be able to figure out how do you review and do this thing called clash detection instead of just actually, let's just go build it wrong and then let's reset the boxes another way or let's tear it down and just go add more studs until we think it's going to get held up, right? And there's so much of that happening out there to where, but it's actually really hard of like comprehensively saying, you know what, I'm all in, we're going to do this digitally all as a team one way. And that's why I really wanted you two to come in and talk about this because, Eric, you talked about that at the beginning of this of like how hard it is to get all the players on the same page. But, man, money talks and bullshit walks. If you have to put all the money up front, you better have a different story to tell because that story is very differently. And the story talks a lot about, Ross, you talked about the old adage of pick two out of the three. There's an undertone that's trumped everything for a long time, and it's speed. The whole price, service, quality, it's like, how fast can you do the price? How fast can you do the speed? Price, service, quality, how fast? Well, we're in this time where we're all sitting to say, well, if we're going to do it faster, we can't just do it crappier. And that's where I believe the system built comes in of actually solving this stuff. But you have to do a few more things vertically to figure that out. So, you know, Ross, can you talk about a few, you talked about some different projects on your integrated approach. Can you tell us really, you know, what is DL Cohen, what are you guys out to solve from all these different legacies? If you've lived under your grandfather, your dad, everybody doing so much great work, everybody that knows you is like passionate about your lessons learned, and you're very good at articulating those lessons learned.
I don't know if I'm good at articulating them, but I'll give it a shot, Devin. The reason we started a component manufacturing company plainly was to deliver complete and correct square footage. And I know I sound like a broken record in that regard, but truly, with how complicated framing has become, we really did determine that there was no other way. Importantly, it's not just what we are selling is not a wall panel. What we are selling is the implementation of a comprehensive structural model. It's not one element, the floor, the roof, the wall, that's important. It is the integration of everything required, the other trades, all of what's typically an independent shop drawing. But to incorporate all of that into one central repository of information that has a tangible path to implementation, and by that I mean running through a saw that's cutting all of the structure and marking all of the and marking the same. It's not up to individuals to interpret and ultimately build correctly, which is fundamentally, you know, what a plan is, and is as difficult for me to implement as anybody else, which is why we are so passionate about the power of the model.
Implementation of a comprehensive structural model. And I use the word structural, and it's a mouthful because it actually has to work. And there's a lot of the digital model meets the physical model. And the part I want to pass it back to you, Eric, of saying, like, it's one thing vertically integrating for yourself. It's a lot more doing it for others, right? And this whole chicken or the egg of, do you do it all vertically internally as a developer? And I see a lot of that happening right there. But these machines, you have to feed these machines, and you're putting out 5 houses a week, but I think you want to put out even more than that, right? So it's this push and pull strategy of, like, you got to make sure you're putting enough out the door, but doing it the right way. And once it goes out the door, then where does it go as time evolves and figure this stuff out? First, we're going to have a couple questions from the floor of the Housing Innovation Alliance, because credit where credit's due, they're a great organization that's really helping us put all these stories together, right? Because there's not just one way to do this. It's a lot of different ways, and you got to figure out how to make it work for you, but then most importantly, the team and the company making it work. And one of the things, Ross, you talked a lot about marking the studs. And we keep talking about framing and how you guys are marking a wood stud. But wood could be a lot of thing of, I know Fading West, we've had podcasts and deep dives and conversations around engineered wood, metal studs, what type of structure you're building from when it comes to integration of a comprehensive, that's the comprehensive part of using companies like Ross has been talking a lot about MyTech, about how a lot of you have to take lessons from the past, like MyTech, a great company that has been building comprehensive structural trusses for a long time. And that little sticker on the truss is so valuable because it's that this is the stamp of the digital meets the physical model, of actually stamping that thing, right? And I'll never forget sitting with Fading West and sitting with your design team and trying to figure that all out of, like, it took you years to get the state and get you guys up and running. But then once you got that stamp of approval, it's like, we can't make, how do we make these changes, right? But we have to figure out how to make these changes in a way that is collaborative and works together. Because what Ross and I are working on is, let's take companies like MyTech, how you're taking a lumber stud and taking the trimmer of those stud and putting a different sticker on there. And then specialists of the riches and niches, like my window and door company, we represent several great manufacturers of, like, really understanding that partnership of how does that kit of parts come together. When you talked about listening and learning from the Toyota Lean principles, that how you guys really started your whole foundation, right, Eric? And so that, you know, when D.L. Cohen's out to solve that integration of a comprehensive structural model, what's your take to that, Eric, of being the business development guy out there trying to integrate
that? Yeah, so you have to get all the voices in the room, which is challenging to begin with, but from there, you have, you know, one of the sayings we have is attainability doesn't mean cheap, right? And Ross has been touching on that in this podcast. So the other challenge we have is there's 300 building codes in our state. So even if we build to one specific area, another client comes in and they have a different building code. So you have snow loads and wind loads and climate zones and all these different things that you have to take into account. So that's one piece to it. The other is, again, if your structures are not going to last, then the cost will come back later to you. So we are trying to build as structurally sound homes as we possibly can. So we pass that on to the end buyer, who then hopefully won't have lots of costs with high electric bills. So it could be in the green area, or it could be that there's issues with it 10, 20 years down the road. So that's another piece that we talk about. We talk also about architecturally interesting. One of the things in modular that we hear all the time is they are not attractive looking houses. So we want to make sure that the homes that we're building, whether it's apartments or single family, attached or detached, are places that any of us would be proud to live in. So those are the tensions, Devin, that happen. And then you get to the end piece. And if the cost of all that is $10,000 more than what a teacher can afford in their mortgage or getting a loan, then we blew it, right? Because then
yeah, you didn't begin with the end in mind, because that
So you have to start there and kind of work backwards, and that is where the tension comes in all of this.
So the last part of this podcast is going to be shout out to the Housing Innovation Alliance team who we've been working with, to where this is going to be, this is titled Questions from the Summit Floor, where last April we did a presentation and we're working toward with them on agendas for next April. It's going to be a repeat of last year, a great conference. I highly recommend being part of the Housing Innovation Alliance, where April 2024 will be back at the University of Denver. The first question, we'll spin these from Eric and then over to Ross. Eric, what are the pitfalls of starting offsite methods?
Again, I think it's education. So the goal is that if you already have a site plan and you have architects who've designed really fantastic structures, and then you get offsite, in our case, modular, fully volumetric involved, we may not be able to meet those designs, because our designs are so strict, because to produce these at a high level and quickly, as you mentioned earlier, Devin, we have to have 6 or 7 just basic designs. So if you vary from that, then it's a very difficult to bring those two things together.
The barriers to offsite method, the primary one that comes to mind from my perspective and what I believe the source of our relative successes versus others is that we incorporated install along with an offsite manufacturing company. Or as the case may be, we started a manufacturing company to start a turnkey framing company. What you see in this town typically is material suppliers building panels absent the comprehensive modeling that I've referenced now several times, and with the intent of supporting third-party framers. It's sort of by nature an adversarial dynamic that I think this has resulted in the absence of really any bona fide manufacturing offsite framing manufacturing capacity in this town.
So the two kind of the president and the guy that's really been with Charlie from the beginning, it's such a cool story of Fading West, where you guys jumped into it and really have, like, you're still here doing well in the news locally, globally. We commend you, and we're big fans of everything of Fading West. But Eric, what keeps you and Charlie and the team up at night since starting Fading West?
Great question, Devin. I think for us, we partner with nonprofits, we partner with municipalities looking for housing, we partner with developers, we partner with businesses who just frankly don't have housing for their own employees. So the houses never go on the market. They're just flipping them to their own employees. So with that in mind, and as we mentioned earlier, 10 to 12 boxes are coming off our line every week, which is 5 or 6 homes. And as you mentioned, as we get into this more, we've been open 2 years, we'll just keep getting faster and faster. The dilemma is we can't just stop for a week or two because we have tremendous amount of overhead. So lining up all those partners and their projects to make sure that the factory churns week after week, year after year, you can't have a little slippage in the line. And if you do, it's, as we've seen around the country, it's devastating for factories. So keeping the pipeline full with a backlog, if we have that, we sleep well. If we don't, that's when we're up at night.
Ross, I bet you have a similar answer to that.
Do you need me to reiterate what Eric just said? I mean, we have a little bit different model, of course. You know, we put less into every unit of measure or piece out of the factory, but you know, we're geared up to deliver 40,000 square feet a week. And while we are not involved, you know, cradle to grave at the same level that the Fading West team is, you know, we have to have amidst our entire makeup of clients, you know, enough work to feed that and to flex in and out of one product versus another and not build product too far ahead of time. And just like Eric said, when the pipeline's soft and the factory's slow, it's really uncomfortable, because contrasted with a traditional framing model that's just completely variable costing by nature, at least largely so, the world of offsite built components and running a factory is anything but that. So it takes, for me, it takes wonderful clients and long-term relationships and buy into our model, which we've been really fortunate to see from our client base. And I really do believe this town and is starting to shift away from the expectation, the low expectation of what framing is, and adopting what it can be. And so, you know, we're fortunate and ultimately in that, and seeing that we're able to keep this factory running and that the model's resonating with the community. So.
Yeah. And I just want to add, like, zooming way out to say, like, you have to be able to provide something that somebody pays you for that you can keep the business going. Right. But very, very locally, where the boots are on the ground, I have a lot of people that, you know, an honor to lead this podcast, where people all over the globe listen to this podcast regularly and constantly comment. They're like, but what do you do day to day? I'm like, well, I feed my family by selling windows and doors. And that's what I do day to day. But you have to really be able to disconnect those things, because it can get ugly quickly if it doesn't work out, right? Of like shutting in. There's a lot of that conversation happening around about all of us that are true innovators or visionary leaders. Like, you take big risks and you kind of have to do that to move things forward, but you better figure out how to have partners to have that reward. So the final question I guess I'd leave you with, Eric, is, why offsite? Because it's not easy to make these changes, right? It's a lot easier just go back to doing it the same old way, but we all know it doesn't work. So we have to figure out why offsite.
And so for us, we came into existence to solve a problem. And the problem is there is no attainable houses being built in our country right now. Massive shortages in our state and all around the country. So this is one of many innovative ways that we believe will help solve that problem. They are energy efficient. There's a radical reduction of waste from 30% down to 5 or 6% waste. We believe that they're architecturally interesting, the speed to market, and they are cheaper. And so those are all going to be parts of the puzzle to get more housing in this realm into our country.
And I totally agree. And before I pass this over to Ross, I was had the pleasure of hosting Eric and Bleeker and some of the team, and we had a day deep dive around expansion and partnership and how that stuff could all work. And the part I really remember from the day is, like, be careful about saying they don't know what they're doing. I'm just going to do it all myself, and I'm going to start. And there's so many people starting new things like it's never been done before. Especially, I didn't realize I was blown away when I walked into D.L. Cohen and saw the pictures on the wall of them moving full houses and the whole house setting on dry ice, and the stories from the people at D.L. Cohen that have been living this for a long time. I turn it over to you, Ross, to say, be careful what you wish for and how fast you go, right? I've been the gas on this, and there's a lot of people reach out to me. It's like, Devin, can you help me start this, 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 and this? And the longer I go through this great game of business, sometimes you just need to slow down, listen, and ask more questions before just jumping in and being the bull in the china shop. And Ross, I genuinely appreciate you being that guy of always asking the question, why put windows and doors and walls? Why prep for electrical? Why go from this type of construction to this type of construction? Why put siding on this? Why? And why do you ask why? Because you don't want to be less successful by adding more to the story. What's your story for why offsite, Ross?
Devin, I love the lead in and intro. I want to, just before answering that, though, I want to I think illuminate a little bit of what you just said. For us and for me, we're trying to be very conscious about what the market and the client is asking for. So we're trying to be efficient. We're trying to apply energy and resources where they'll reap the most rewards. We're not trying to extend ourselves unnecessarily, and we're trying to be real conscious of what we take on in that regard. But why offsite, Devin? You know, I keep saying it was for the ability, the tool to deliver complete and correct square footage, ultimately what that is it's control. We comprehensively model our work and build it off site rather than stick framing it, because there's no other way to control what we do, to manage our risk for ourselves and for our clients, and do what we believe is required, and certainly is contractually. Ultimately, it becomes a path for us to do more, to optimize the design for those that follow, and to deliver the best product we can, and to grow our business.
Love it. And so as we close this thing out, I'll go Eric and then Ross. Eric, what is that one thing you want to leave our master affiliates, our builders and affiliates, to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
Yeah. Again, our innovation is the manufacturing of housing. And we are a rough draft company. And so we are listening to everybody around us and adapting as quickly as we can to make sure that we can get that amazing workforce in our country into homes, whether it's as homeowners or rentals, whatever it might be, but to be open to innovation. We've been building houses the same way for 50 or 100 years, and there are new ways to go about this that will make this process go smoother.
The one thing I could offer builders and clients of ours is that there is a better ability to deliver a framed structure than you're likely accustomed to and expect. We can do it faster, we can build a better product, and we can do it at price parity or better. And I want to reiterate, even though we're modeling and building traditionally designed product, being engaged early, much like the sentiment that Eric has voiced already, you know, provides for us delivering a product at dramatically reduced budget. So, you know, there is a better path, even for traditional work not designed for, you know, a modular or volumetric process. You know, we can do the traditional work.
I absolutely love it. And the thing I would close out with, Tribe, is that you first have to figure out why you do what you do before what you do. And I think we've talked a lot about that. And I raise my hand and say, I really struggle with that, because the whole what is this catch-all of everybody just says, oh, we want to build it the best way. And then you try to get educated of what that means to build it the best way. But technically, if we're really honest about it, why we do what we do is because this is how we get paid. But it has to be more than that if you're truly going to be an innovator like you talked about, Eric. And you have to pay attention to the shifts in the building, because it has to change, right? And so it truly is an honor to be leading master facilitators like you both here, and saying some days are long when you're trying to be a group of innovators and moving this thing forward. But boy, the years are short regardless of what you're going to do. And we don't want to be the ones leaving behind legacies of the built environment of stuff that is just get it built to get paid, right? So when we say, why do you do what you do? It's because we truly want to build better buildings. And because there's so many ways to do that, but you first have to jump in and row in the same direction. And it's an honor to have you guys here in the studio. Big shout out to Housing Innovation Alliance. If you want to meet these great guys in person, they'll be there next April, where we're working to put all this stuff together. Construction is not a one sentence, or you just go to one conference and it's done, right? You got to check the box, and you got to continue to check the box and make a new version. And whatever version that is what goes to market is the version today, but you always be getting that better. What's your final thoughts, Eric? Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, you know what? Teamwork. We all need to be on the same side of the table to solve this, from the builders to the developers to the municipalities to, you know, the folks in Washington and in the governor's office and on down the road. And if we do, there is a way forward to solve this affordability crisis that we have in housing in our country.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing your story. Ross, send us off.
Yeah, buddy. You know, my parting comment would be, it's an exciting time in construction. At so many other points where this antiquated industry has sort of fought, it seems today that a number of people are listening and trying to find out what they can do differently and better on each of their own projects. And so in that, I'm really excited, and the future seems bright.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.